Sometimes when I talk to you, well, I just don't know what to say. Except that, oh Lord, please show us your way. There's plenty of food, and people are hungry. There's plenty of love, and people are lonely. There's plenty of money, but not enough to spend. So much sadness, and a whole
everybody to Juwanza for Life. My name is Juwanza. Thank you so much for your time. It's great to have you along. I am very, very pleased to be able to bring to you a guest that you've heard on this show many, 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 many times, waiting for my guest to appear. I see the phone lines are lighting up. Orwa, if that's you, please press 1 and I'll know that that's you and I can bring you on board. Had Orwa Hehimetu Ryan comment as a special guest on these airwaves many, many days. And each time we have an opportunity to speak with our brother, he gets a rousing response because the information he brings is so timely, very necessary. And today's show is going to be no exception at all. Today, we're going to be talking about a very important issue, evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spiritual science. Again, evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spiritual science. So while we're waiting on my guest to get here, let me tell you a little bit about him, okay? And just in case you're tuning in for the first time, Orwa Hehimetu Ryan Comet has been a member of the Oseraset Society since 1975. He was appointed Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region by Shechem Shechem Ra-un-Nefer Amen I, who is chief priest and king of the Oseraset Society. Well, as Orwa Hehimetu Ryan Comet is responsible for guiding the lives of Oseraset's members and the society's activities in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, he's currently a member of the society's Kerry Hebb priesthood, and he's headed Oseraset's African Support Project. He also holds a bachelor's degree in African American Studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University. He's named and supervised the naming of hundreds of men, women, and children using the process described in his book, African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. He's also written another fabulous book called Divine Kingship of Asante, a Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community. So let me see if this is my guest, Orwa. If that's you, just tuning in, just press 1, and I can bring you on board, and then I can – that wasn't Orwa either. Well, Orwa, if you're out there and you hear me, please press 1 on your telephone if you're on the line, and then I can bring you on board, and you can share with our listeners the information that we'll be delving into tonight. While we're waiting for Brother Orwa, oh, there he is. Okay, let me get him. All right, everybody, get ready for a powerful, powerful show. Again, to all of the new listeners, thank you so much for your time, and you're going to be blessed for your patience. Thank you so much. Okay. 0161, Orwa. 0161, Orwa, is that you?
Yes. No, this is Alan Dorsey.
Oh, hey, Brother Allen. Hold on. All right, hold on, my brother. I'm going to be waiting for my guest to get here. Thank you so much for your patience, and thanks for tuning in. Please hold.
All right, okay.
Hold on, everybody. Okay, we're waiting on Brother Orwahehi Medurine comment again. If you've been tuning in, you know that we've done all kinds of shows with my special guest. If you just scroll down the archives, you'll see series of shows that we've done with him, ranging from the Seven Divisions of the Spirit, the 11 Laws of God. We've done shows on the Divine Kingship of the Asante Model, where we actually looked at the Asante Kingdom and their system of governing. It was based on his book, A Model for Sustainable Development of Self and Community. And, oh, there he is. No, that's not it. Okay. Brother Allen, could you unpress your one there? Because it looks like somebody's wanting to check in. Wait for my guest to get here. Yeah, we've done shows on the Asante model where we actually looked at the Asante kingdom and basically their ways of governing from spiritual to political to environment to economic, and how we can gauge and glean from that society principles that can be put into place today. Thank you so much, Alan. Again, Orwai, if you're on the line, because the lines are filling up, if you're on the line, please press 1, and I'll bring you on board. I tell you what, everybody, in the meantime, while we're waiting on Orwai, I'm going to go find him, okay? So bear with me and enjoy.
Going on in the world today. Sometimes when I talk to you, well, I just don't know what to say. Except that, oh Lord, will you show us your way? Father, there's plenty of food. And people are hungry. There's plenty of love, and people are lonely. There's plenty of money, but not enough to spend. So much sadness and a whole.
Earth is calling. Heaven, come in. Earth is calling. Everybody, thank you so much for your patience. Still waiting for my guest, Brother Orwa, Hehi, Medurine, Comet. Again, as I was stating, we got a fabulous show lined up for you. Orwa's in the house. I'm going to go to him right now. Orwa, thank you so much for being my guest. Thank you so much, everybody, for your patience. Orwa is with us now. Thank you so much again for being my guest today.
Yeah, sorry I'm late. My mother's going through a little crisis with dealing with that, but I'm here now.
Thank you so much.
Can you
again, why I appreciate Brother Orwa so much, even in spite of situations that he's been dealing with, he still makes time, as you all can see, to be with us and to share with us. I almost feel guilty for doing the interview now. If you feel like you need to go or why at any point, just it's understandable, okay?
No problem.
All right.
We're good for now.
Everybody, again, my Orwa Hehi Medurine Comet. He's Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osirisset Society, and tonight we're going to be discussing evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spiritual science. Evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spirituality. African spiritual science is actually going to be a workshop coming up this Saturday in Washington, D.C., and we'll tell you all about that. As a matter of fact, before we even get to the show, let me do that now, because oftentimes, for whatever reason, people, you know, got to go. Sometimes people don't stay for the whole show, and I don't want you to miss this announcement. It's very important. Well, at the Simbeb Wellness Complex in Washington, D.C., on this Saturday, March the 24th, there's going to be a workshop. It's going to be on just what we're going to be discussing today, evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spiritual science. And that workshop is going to be at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. The zip code there is 20011. And for more information, please call 202-630-2507. Again, that's 202-630-2507. The cost for that is going to be only $10, and it starts at 5, but you want to get there early to make sure that you can, you know, get seated and get in, because I'm sure that it's going to be packed, and you want to make sure that you get in and get seated comfortably. Again, that's this Saturday, March the 24th at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest. That's the Simbeb Wellness Complex in Washington, D.C. In case you need a MapQuest, it is 20011. And for more information, please call 202-630-2507. It's only $10, and make sure you get there early. It starts at 5, but if I were you, I'd get there at 4. That way you can have time to browse around the Simbeb Wellness Complex. I mean, they've got a boutique there. They've got the Simbeb Cafe there. You want to make sure that you have time not to just browse, but to browse and to purchase, okay, and to get something to eat while you're there, all right? So, again, I am very, very humbled and honored to have as my special guest today, Dr. Orwa Hehi Medurine Comet, Paramount King of the Washington, D.C. region of the Osirisset Society. And, again, we're going to be discussing evidence-based spirituality, restoring African spiritual science. Orwa, for those who might be tuning in and don't know and, you know, kind of have an idea of what they're going to be discussing at the workshop, what is evidence-based spirituality? Evidence-based, that's that word evidence-based stands out to me. What is evidence-based spirituality?
Well, we have to keep this on the down low because the Trump administration, within their agencies, that they could not use the term evidence-based. So we don't want to agitate anybody or get them upset. Sorry, you got enough problems. But evidence-based, meaning, you know, African spirituality has been given a bad rap through the processes of Western culture, white supremacy, colonialism, racism, etc. You know, whenever people think about African spirituality, they think that, first of all, that it has something to do with either devil worship or so-called voodoo or you know, evil or fetishism, or there's a whole lot of pejorative terms that have been used to cast the processes, techniques, the traditions of our ancestors. Now, as in any tradition, in any process or any system, there can be violations, there can be corruptions, there can be things that aren't properly done or properly controlled or whatever. But within the context of a traditional cultural system, the spiritual practices of our ancestors were very well controlled, and not only that, they were designed to do the ultimate goal of spirituality, which is to
You still with me?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, sorry, the phone I'm on, I pressed the wrong, my ear pressed the wrong button, sorry.
Okay.
As I was about to say, our traditions, our spirituality is based for the ultimate goal of which is to awaken our divinity. That's the ultimate goal of all. If we're a part of our being is spirit, which it is, then we come into the world as to recognize or awaken that aspect of the divinity that's within us. So the divine spirit, which is a part of our being, is that which we have to work with in the world. So how do we access it? How do we manipulate it? How do we control it? How do we use it to improve our lives and improve the world? That's the process and basis for African spiritual teachings. Now, that's the scientific understanding of the practices. But a lot of it was, let's put this in a context. Back in 5,000 years ago, there were no books. If there was something that was being read, it was being read by a few people who were trained to write it and read it and study it, etc. But the mass of the people did not have access to the kind of literature that we have today. So when things were written down, you heard those saying about being written in stone, that meant that a lot of care and time was put into recording stuff. It was kind of hard to erase something once you chisel it into stone. It's not like, a magic eraser is going to clean that out. So you got to be very determined, you got to be very focused, you got to be very accurate with the terms you use and the process and what you record, because hence it's going to take a while to put it down. But that was just for the elite, basically, those who were trained, who had access to time and space and time to study this stuff. The mass of the people were just primarily out there earning their living, working, because it wasn't like, you could invest in the stock market and make a killing. There was no Facebook at that point. There was no Google and none of these things that go on. You invest in them early, and there was no Bitcoin. People were out there working for a living. People were farming primarily. They were miners, they were engineers. Whatever they were doing, they were primarily working to control and to build for their families. So there was a class of people then who were the scholars or the sages or the scribes or whomever, who were required to make sure and record information so that for posterity. So since it required a lot of study and time, they just couldn't communicate all of that to everyone. So they built things within the culture that would get the message across, even though the message wasn't necessarily comprehended on every level. For example, this is a classic example, a very good example, that I discovered when I was doing my research on the Divine Kingship text. As a matter of fact, a lot of the material that we're going to be discussing on Saturday is coming out of that text. I couldn't put everything in there because that wasn't the focus of the text itself. But this one here, this point here, is going to be very germane. For example, in ancient Kemet, it was taught that everyone's divine being. Every man and woman came to earth to awaken their divinity, to become an Osir. Now, an Osir was a person who had overcome sin, and because they overcame sin, they were able to access the higher aspects of their spirit, those parts of the spirit which you call the divine parts of the spirit. See, the same way that Western man has put a lot of time and energy and brain power into figuring out the physical world in terms of, how many chemical elements there are and all that kind of stuff. That's good stuff, valuable stuff. Our ancestors has put the same kind of skill and time and effort and genius into figuring out the spiritual world, because everything manifests from spirit first onto the physical plane. So So if I'm just spending my time working in the physical world, then I'm not going to get to the root cause of anything, because everything manifests as a thought, which is a spirit in the spirit world, metaphysical world, before it becomes reality in the physical world. So ancestors understand this basic rules of the spirit, spent their time understanding and breaking down the spirit. Now, what's the spirit? In our term, in Western culture, in the Western spiritual traditions, what did you use that term? There's not really a lot of understanding what the spirit is. People say you have a spirit. Well, okay, what's that? And they say you have a soul. Well, okay, what's that? Our ancestors identified that we just don't have a spirit. We have seven different levels to our spirit. And the spirit, since it's the vehicle of operation, the vehicle of expression, each of these different levels of spirit gives us a different level of expression or experience in the world. So when I say the divine part of the spirit, even though all of us are part of our divine being, there's a part of the spirit through which we're able to access the divinity in its unadulterated state. I mean, it's the part, the three omnis that we speak of when we talk about God, the omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence. There's a part of our spirit that allows us to access that omniscience, to know any and all things. There's a part of our spirit which allows us to access that omnipresence, to be one with all things. There's a part of the spirit that allows us to access that omnipotence, to be able to manifest and make things happen in the world. But in order to get there, we have to cultivate the lower parts of the spirit, purify the lower parts of the spirit, to awaken and feed the higher parts of the spirit. Now, think of it this way. We hear about the chakras, right? Seven chakras coming out of the Hindu tradition, Indus Valley traditions. Now, the lower chakras, you have the lower chakras, the Mulahara chakra, and then you have the Sahasrara chakra, the highest chakra. But between these three, the science is that the energy that's rising from the lowest chakra as it goes up through the other chakras energizes them and enables you to use them. And once you hit if you hit the top chakra, then it's able to access that part of the spirit which is divine. But the majority of people, we end up using all of our energy in the lower three chakras. We end up using our energy in the physical chakra, we end up using in the emotional chakra or the sexual chakra. So the higher parts of the spirit go unfed. And anything that's unfed or undernourished is not going to be able to function to its efficiency. So when our ancestors took time to break down these seven divisions of spirit, they also put in place techniques and practices within their culture that would allow people to cultivate these parts of the spirit even though they may not know the science behind it. So in ancient Kemet, for example, we have the understanding that the heart, the ebb, is an important part of awakening, becoming a divine being. You know, the whole science of purifying the heart or making the heart as light as a feather, that whole science is understood through the scriptures that were scribed, the pictures and the images, the stories that were told in Kemet. But the science that undergirds that wasn't there for the common people to understand. But what science has proven today is that not only is the heart a very powerful image in terms of controlling and developing emotional, controlling emotional passion, desire, etc., but the heart is also a strong energizer of, and when it's in balance, when it's synchronized, when it's light as a feather, when it's not being moved by these emotions, etc., is a process of synchronization that takes place with the brain. And the synchronization that takes place with the brain is what enables the brain now, the higher parts of the brain, which we've talked about before, but I have to talk about them again here in a little bit, specifically the prefrontal cortex, to awaken and do its job of controlling the animal parts of our spirit and the lower parts of our spirit. So it's a symbiotic relationship that takes place. But before, in our ancestors, in the stories, they just talk about controlling the heart and allowing you to be tested and become an osir. But the science that's coming out now is showing that there's an actual scientific underpinning for this expression. So as I was looking at that in Kemet, then we found the same kind of thing in amongst the Asante, where, you know, again, we're not talking about a literal tradition. We're talking about an oral tradition or a cultural, where a lot of the spiritual practices are passed through the culture. So within the cultural practices of Asante, just as in ancient Kemet, there was an understanding that the heart, in order for one to become one with God or awaken the divinity within them, one has to keep a cool heart. In Kemet, we said, keep the heart still. Don't allow passions and emotions to rule you. And in Asante, they say, keep the heart cool. And so you're saying the same thing. Don't allow your passions and emotions to rule you. And by doing so, you're able then to awaken that part of the brain that enables you to access and over ultimate control over your spirit. So in Asante, that part of the brain is called the okra. That's the part of the spirit that functions within the brain. That's the part of the spirit through which the divine expresses itself. And they literally call it a spark of the divine, or a spark of Vinyami, which is a term for a supreme being. Now, this concept of a spark of Vinyami is also expressed in South Africa amongst the Bantu people, where the term for the supreme being was Itongo. And when they talked about the supreme being, the part of the divinity that rests within man, they said it's like a spark of the Itongo. But within that same story, that same understanding, the same literature that talked about this, it talked about how this knowledge is passed and stored in all the nations of Africa, right? It's not a literal transition. It's cultivated into the cultural practices. So in Asante, in order to awaken the prefrontal cortex part of the brain, they had this process called Inyami Dua, or a shrine called Inyami Dua, and they had a process called Inyami Su, where they would go and dip water in this bowl and rub it in the center of the forehead while they visualize themselves manifesting the character of God. So everyone was doing this 100 years ago. But today, very few people are doing it, if anyone is doing it, because it was written off as just, you know, some superstitious behavior, because there's no science undergird it. But now we know from the science that, in terms of the effect of meditation on the body and the brain, that when you're focusing your visualization on the center of your forehead, which is where the prefrontal cortex is, which is where the kings and Kemet were crowns, which is where the Asante man or woman was rubbing, while they visualize themselves manifesting the character of God. While you're doing that, you're sending energy to the brain that will allow the brain to cultivate and develop the power and the ability to control the animal influences, the sinful influences, that will allow you person then to overcome sin, to become the divine being that is written in the scriptures. So that's one of the scientific undergirds of this process. But because people thought that the Western model was better, that Jesus was a better way, and nothing wrong with Jesus necessarily, but that how do I awaken my divinity? That's what's missing in the Christian system, the process of awakening one's divinity. Because all too far too often, people are told that Jesus is the way, that Jesus is divine, but they're not told that you have to become Christ-like. They're told that you have to bow down and worship Christ, believe in Christ, but you're sinful by nature. And if I accept the fact that I'm sinful by nature, then I'm going to accept the fact that I'm a human being. I'm going to accept the fact that I'm not a divine being, which means I'm not going to become a divine being, because I circumscribe my activities, my beliefs, my practices based on what I believe. So if I believe that I'm a human being, then I'm going to function as a human being. I'm going to fall prey to the human being characteristics and behaviors, etc. But if I understand that I have a divinity within me and my goal in life is to become a divine being, then I'm going to strive to overcome the human within me. And that's what our ancestors were doing, even though the common people didn't really know what they were doing in terms of the scientific basis of it. But that's part of the process we're going to be discussing this Saturday.
Well, let's talk for a moment, if we could. You brought in the topic of the Western man, and even when we think about the Western man and we look at the world today, you know, it's easy to say, okay, well, you know, the world is in the state that it's in, you know, because of the Western man, okay? And if we could talk about, in the context of this discussion, just the law of Hosea, you know, which talks about being one with everybody, you know, that we're one, everything that is, everything that's created, we're one with all, none with all. And when that, that would include the Western man, okay? Because if there's a spark of, that spark of divinity is in everybody, that same spark of divinity that's in the African, that's in the Chinaman, that's in the Hindu man, the Indian, the Alaskan, the Eskimo, you know, is also resides in Western man in spite of the things that we might see and say, okay, well, this individual or this group of individuals has created and wreaked havoc on the planet, that individual or group of individuals cannot be against us, okay? Because if nothing and no one can be against us and that all experiences come to us that we may acquire wisdom and power, then could you talk about that? Because oftentimes I think that when people hear certain terms like, for example, restoring African spiritual tradition or African spiritual science with the emphasis on African, that's not to negate any other culture or any other system or, you know, anything like that. But if you would talk about that, again, just the oneness of all and that when it, even when it comes to the Western man, that, that same divinity that is in the African, the Chinaman, the Hindu man, is also in the Western man. Would that be a fair statement?
Sure. The issue is this. I'm going to use a comment from Ogotemele, the Dogon sage. He was asked by Marcel Gréal, a French ethnologist, I guess it's called best term, who lived amongst the Dogon recording their spiritual system. And one day, Gréal asked Ogotemele, well, what do you think about white people? And Ogotemele said, I'm not concerned about white people. They're children of the moon. Time will take care of them. What do you mean by that? Well, within the spiritual understanding of ancient Kemet, each, we talked about seven divisions of the spirit. Well, each of these divisions of the spirit has a time sink in terms of cultivation and awakening. For example, the first two divisions of the spirit, the physical and the electromagnetic, are what's being cultivated through the first 7 years of life. You're learning how to walk, to coordinate your hands and movements and feet and all that kind of stuff. You're learning about sensations, taste and feeling and hearing. All those things are being developed in the first 7 years of life. Second 7 years of life, from 7 to 14, we're working on cultivating our memory, our learning, etc. We're, you know, experiencing the outside world and begin to take things in, etc. Now, from the next 14 years of life, we're working on intellect and our artistic faculties, our ability to segregate and put things together, take things apart and look at them separately, and then put things together based on their external qualities. That takes us to 28. Now, from 28 to 35, the next 7 years of life, let me back up for a second. We talk about the moon. The first 28 years of life are ruled by the moon, per se. And what does that mean? It means that at the moment a person is born, wherever the moon is in their, in whatever sign the moon is in their chart, it takes 28 years for that cycle to complete. So it's a 28-year cycle where the moon is the dominant energy of the individual. And what's the energy of the moon? The moon is basically an imitator, right? Children are great imitators. The moon imitates the light of the sun. If there was no sun, then there would be no moonlight. So whatever bit of the moonlight we see is because a part of the sun is reflecting off of the moon. So when there's a new moon, that means that the earth is blocking is in between the earth and the sun. So there's no sun that's out part of the moon that's reflecting light. In a full moon, that means that the light of the sun is hitting the moon in its fullness. It looks like it has light, but it's just imitating light. So that's what they mean by moon behavior, imitation. The first 20 years of life are primarily controlled by indiscriminate imitation. Light is what it enables us to see. If I'm working in shadows and reflections, I'm not getting clear, concise light, so I'm not seeing things clearly. I'm really feeling my way through life. So that's why people talk about, you know, how do you feel me? Meaning that they're relying on not seeing what's going on, but to understand working in the other senses of the moon, is the light is dim or darkened. So now from 20 to 35 is when the sun, quote unquote, is born within the person's spirit. I mean, the sun, the light of the sun itself becomes the guiding, should become the guiding energy of the person. So at this point, a person can be able to see things clearly and be able to clearly discriminate and discern their seeing. So in ancient Kama, for example, traditionally, a person could not rule until after the 35th birthday, because that's when the solar part of the being was kicking in, the ability to see things. So what Uncle Timothy was saying was that Europeans, white people, are dominated by the lunar part of the being. They still haven't grown into the light, called the solar ray yet. Now, this, I added another bit of science now supporting this. We talked about the prefrontal cortex as being the part of the brain that controls the animal, the lower parts of being, the senses and sensualism and emotionalism and all those things. Well, how long do you think it takes the prefrontal cortex to fully develop?
What, 28 years?
35,
okay.
So you see, the science is now. Our ancestors talked about this stuff thousands of years ago, but they weren't talking about it from this angle. But we know that they knew what we're talking about, because science is now coming back and validating many of the principles that we talked about. And that's what we're going to be discussing this weekend. I mean, there's so much stuff that there's no way we can discuss all this stuff in an hour and a half. But we're going to begin the process. So, and I think what I'm going to have to do is go ahead and
do a book on this. Could a white person or a European become an Osir?
Sure. See, spiritual growth is not like growth educationally, intellectual growth. In intellectual growth, it's possible for an individual to learn on their own outside of the environment that they're in and begin to prosper. For example,
mm-hmm.
Bill Gates was a college student, like everybody, I mean, at some point in his life. He, I guess, is a math mm-hmm. major or something like that. But he was able to take the information that he had learned and go beyond it, even though the people around him weren't able to do that. His intellectual prowess. That's what happens with intellect. It's possible to happen. Every person who has stuck out or strung out or stepped out on their own in that way, they're able to tap into something within their psyche or their spirit that enables them to take the same information everybody else had and use it in a different way. So that's the process. But spiritually speaking, it's based on your culture, meaning we all cultivated, we were nourished through the culture. You know, there's a great debate about whether it's nature or nurture. Well, it's both. You know, we have in our nature the ability to become divine beings, but the ability to manifest that divinity comes through nurturing. And what nurtures it? The culture and society in which we live. So, for example, amongst the Asante, when they, even though they were living in a quote-unquote primitive, quote-unquote environment, cultural living circumstances, they were cultivating awakening divinity by rubbing the forehead and manifesting in Yame Su. So it's the culture that provides the spirit, the opportunities for spiritual growth. So we grow as a culture. And the only way the individual can move beyond that is if they get specific initiation that will enable them to awaken these higher parts of the spirit prior to it becoming the nurturing of the lake. You know, it's like you put fish in the lake, right? If you put the same feed in there for everybody, everybody's going to grow at the same rate. But if you're able to take some fish out of that lake and give them some probiotics, and that's just a term, I'm not saying use it probiotic, I mean something that's powerful and
right.
to stimulate their system, then they can excel beyond these other fish. Well, that's the same as, maybe that's why Jesus went fishing, I don't know. But anyway, you say it was a fisher amongst men, right? He was trying to find the right catch. So
right.
anyway, that's what it's the culture that's the basis of spiritual growth. So Western culture does not allow for people who are embedded in that culture to evolve spiritually. But within the African cultural practices that I just described amongst the Asante and amongst ancient Kemet, the culture itself nourished people so that they can awaken their divinity through the behaviors in the culture itself. So that's what Timothy was saying, that white folks are children of the moon, meaning that the culture has not cultivated the ability to awaken the solar, the intellect, the Heru part of the spirit yet, the king within them. So to piggyback off of, not piggyback, whatever, to tap into the Black Panther story, you know, that last scene after the first closing where the second part of the movie after the first closing, after the credits, where the Panther, the Black Panther, the king is addressing the UN, and he says that basically something to the effect that, you know, we have held our traditions and culture and techniques and stuff from the world, but we're now willing to share with them. And this white boy sitting from way up representing one of the countries says, begging your pardon, King, not to be disrespectful, but what kind of group of farmers teach the world? Well, I don't know the guys who wrote the story, I don't know what they had in mind, but that's the answer. The answer is African culture, embedded in the African culture, is the techniques for awakening the divinity within us. It's a process of the culture itself. Now, cultural practices have been polluted, bastardized, have been changed, challenged, they've been wiped out, you know, but because of ignorance, you know, it's like the belief that modernity had to do with moving to the Western model has set us all back, the world back, in terms of spiritual growth and development. So we got to go back to Africa, spiritually speaking.
Well, what about then, because if the pond is polluted, okay, and, you know, I've heard you mention that if the pond is polluted, you can't blame the fish for being sick. Well, what about then to unpollute the pond, or to use the term drain the swamp for lack of a better one, people with this information, with this knowledge, people who are on the spiritual path, people who are striving to be divine, going into positions that can affect the swamp or affect the pond, for example, politics, people with this information, with this knowledge, going into politics or, you know, in economics and, you know, on a scale that, you know, running for office in their particular city. Because if you can imagine somebody striving to be Osir, sitting in the seat as mayor, you know, or somebody or several people striving to be Osir in Congress, you know, how that could affect the and start the process of unpolluting the swamp. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we're going to be having that conversation. You must be reading my mind or something. We're having a whole conference on that very theme in April, April 28th, 29th. 2-day conference. It's a part of the African Spiritual Coalition weekend event. We're going to be focused just on that theme itself in terms of looking at our cultural practice of the divine kingship as a model for sustainable communities of spiritual people. So that's the goal, is in terms of, if we're going to change the world we live in, we have to change how we live in the world. If we're going to change how we live in the world, what model are we going to follow? Well, the Western model doesn't provide change. It provides the same level of control and manipulation and, you know, the same level of lack of understanding spiritual development that it provides. But the African model provides us with an opportunity, if we're humble enough, to recognize. And see, that's the problem with Western man. He believes, and those who are embedded in his system believe, that, you know, it's all about what you can get out of life as opposed to what you can bring to life. You know, the divinity is what we have to offer, ultimately. Divinity, if we all bring our divinity to the world, then it becomes a divine place. The world is transformed. But the only way that's going to happen is if we can get people in positions of power in our organizations, whatever, that are beginning to live this way of life, transform themselves, and begin to transform the society and the culture of the society. Now, there's a lot of evidence out here to support the benefits of meditation. You just Google it, man. It's incredible how much scientific research they've done to show how meditation improves and affects people, improves their functionality, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So why isn't it being taught in schools? If meditation is, and it is, a way of controlling behavior, then if we're having trouble in our schools with terms of behavior, we know that the youthful brain, the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that doesn't develop fully until when it's 20, it begins to develop fully, so 20 to 35, children are going to make mistakes because their brain is not fully developed. But within this culture itself, you penalize the child for not being an adult. I mean, think about that. If a child's brain is not, let's rephrase it. If the brain, our brain, is the organ which enables us to function in the world, to guide our behavior in the world, right? But the brain is not, the parts of the brain that are there to control incorrect behavior are fully developed. Why would you penalize the child for not functioning properly? You know, you want to build cultural practices into the child so that they can begin to nourish that part of the brain so that when they hit that age, it can begin to function effectively. You know, it's not like it's a magic bullet, that light that just happens at 28. It ain't going to develop at 28 if it hasn't been being nourished all 28 years. It's like, you know, you just don't become a maestro overnight. You know, it takes time. You know, you have the talent within you, you have the potential within you, but the potential has to be nourished, it has to be developed. I mean, there's a few folks that come back in the world from previous lifetimes who, like 6-year-old child playing Bach or Beethoven or Monk or whatever. But there's a few precocious people like that. But the majority of people, it takes time. And even if a person comes to the world with that talent already functioning within them, if they're born in a culture where there's no piano, what happens? So, you know, everything has to be in place. You know, the culture has to provide the opportunities for the development to take place, and there has to be things built within the culture to facilitate the development. So if I'm teaching people, allowing people to drink alcohol, if our leaders, I like to use this example because it's so on point. You know, Congressional Black Caucus, our political leaders, on their weekend, I forget how many millions of dollars of alcohol are consumed. Alcohol destroys the brain. It inhibits the development of the prefrontal cortex and destroys other parts of the brain. So if you're going to be a good leader, if you're going to awaken the higher parts of your abilities to process and discern and see things and guide people, then why would you, on one hand, be putting into your body something that's going to undermine your ability to do that? But that's a cultural thing. The culture preaches that you should drink alcohol. From every child, I mean, when I was, I don't know, probably 6 or 7 years old, maybe a little older, I don't know, I was looking forward to the day when I was old enough to drink Blatt's beer, because my father drank Blatt's beer. You know, it's part of the culture. It's woven into culture. And all these things are woven into Western culture because they understand that if you're going to control people, you have to keep the command center, that part of the brain which gives them the control of their own lives. You have to dumb it down. You have to keep it in underdeveloped. You have to minimize its effectiveness. So you feed it bad foods, sugar. All this sugar, which converts into alcohol in the body, is doing the same thing. Meats, all this toxic food that people are putting in the system, are undermining the body's ability, the brain's ability to cultivate and develop. So when it hits 28 years old, it just keeps at the same level it was. I mean, it's like your Bush, first Bush, Bush 41, I think his number was. You know, the man was 80 years old, president, or 70 years old, whatever, and still functioned like a child. You know, he said, I don't like broccoli. Now, that's a behavior of a child. Someone who won't eat broccoli, they're broccoli. Broccoli is a very powerful plant. Broccoli is precancerous. It has precancer elements to it. And this man, he didn't like broccoli, so he wouldn't eat it. It's a child's behavior. So the brain, the part of the brain that gives the command center, the control, the prefrontal cortex, the spiritual part of the brain, that part of the brain which awakens our divinity, that through which our divinity is able to channel, I should say, is being undermined, underfed, underdetermined by the culture in which we live. Because once people get control of it, then you can no longer manipulate them the way they manipulate us in this culture.
Well, Brother Owa, we've got a few minutes left. If we could talk about, just briefly, even ancestor reverence versus what's been put out there as ancestor worship, because there is a difference. And, you know, when people cut off a certain amount of, or just say cut out a particular system or availability of help even to govern a community, to chart the course of a particular community because, oh, we don't believe in that. We don't believe in that stuff, you know, then you could miss out on valuable insight, valuable direction, valuable assistance from the spirit world. Could you talk about that? Because that's interwoven into the fabric of African spirituality too. Ancestor reverence, reverencing those that came before you, acknowledging those that came before you, and even gaining the assistance of those that came before you.
Yeah, but the last thing you said is the most important. Gain assistance. Now, in the Western world, the idea is that once a person is dead, they're dead. Even though in the Western world, people have dreams about dead people that have germane importance in their lives. People have dreamed the numbers of the birthday of someone who went out and hit the lottery or whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that someone is dead, is gone, is kind of oxymoronic because people have dreams about their ancestors, their mother, their grandmother, whatever. People have found stuff based on a dream that someone came to them in a dream and directed them to a certain drawer or bag or under floorboard or whatever, where they found something that was valuable to the family, whatever. So all these kind of stories exist. So it's kind of ridiculous to say that when a person is dead, they're dead. But the most important part is that these are like happenstance kinds of things. But within the culture itself, there's practices and techniques and training that goes in where one is able to then do it on command, on will. They can go in and into the spirit world and access the knowledge of the predecessor. And we see that in the stories and the myths and all that stuff. I mean, in the Panther we saw it, in the Lion King we saw it. You know, but that's all being dramatized about the real practices that take place in the culture itself. Where, for example, every 40 days or so amongst the Asante, the kings go into the shrine room and pour libations and get guidance from the ancestors, from the predecessors. And so Let me give you a good story. I was in Ghana, I don't know, a couple of years ago, right after the election, right, when 45 came on set. And so naturally the topic is, you know, how crazy this guy is. So I was in Kokofu, one of the seven primary main original provinces or divisions of the Asante Nation. And the Kokofu Hini, it was just quite a crazy day. And so we were sitting there, and he had to go out to the shrine room and just pour libation to his ancestors. So he went out there, he did his thing, came back, he said, "Yeah, I want you to understand that don't worry about your president. Our ancestors will take care of it. We want to protect y'all from it." So, you know, I walked out there, if I had any concerns about this client, I mean, your president, they would, like, wiped away. Because I know the spirit world's ancestors are always on the case. But then what's the scientific basis for this? I mean, sure, we can find these stories about ancestors who come to people, etc. But is there a scientific underpinning? And there is. If we study quantum physics, we find that, you know, within physics there's a concept that matter is never created nor destroyed, right? And that energy, which is matter, which is spirit, whatever you want to call it, is just restructured, rechanneled, reorganized, and recycled, right? So within the understanding of quantum physics, and this is old information, you won't find this in your textbooks, but I found this in a movie, a video, an instructional video that was produced in 1960. What I'm about to tell you, produced in 1960. This is how old this knowledge is. But it hasn't migrated into modern Texas because then you got some other stuff you got to deal with. But anyway, they say that in this text, they talk about how there's an aspect of everyone who exists, who's ever lived on the planet, which remains forever. It never dies. And so the concept is that the more powerful the person is, the more spiritual force the person has, the stronger this spiritual impression is going to be. So it's like if I drop a pebble in a pool, I'm going to create a ripple effect. If I drop a two-ton boulder in the pool, I'm going to create a bigger ripple effect. So those who are so-called giants within our culture, the kings of old, etc., those people have created such a huge amount of ripple effect that those who come after them are able to go out and feed off of their vibe or capture knowledge from them or information from them. So that's how the basic understanding of the importance and value of the ancestors and the role they play in the culture. And that's why the kingship system is so important in terms of preserving the understanding that as a society, as we move forward, we have to constantly look back, because if we don't have this hindsight, you know, people say hindsight is 20/20. Well, if hindsight is 20/20, why aren't we looking back more often? as opposed to just going forward and making all these mistakes.
You know, that's, we should that's be driving backwards. Hindsight is 20.
You know, because the same errors that people are making today, people made before. And so if societies are going to progress, then you got to be able to learn from the mistakes of your predecessors, your ancestors. So there may be someone that in your spirit world, some ancestral personage that can help guide you through something you're going through, because they went through it, they cultivated the ability to understand it, and can guide you in terms of how to process and be successful in the course. But that requires spiritual cultivation and initiation. So it's ultimately the pond. We're back to the pond thing. If we're going to stay within the pond, then we're going to be limited by what's being fed to the pond. And that's what Western culture does. Western culture minimizes everyone's growth and development in the pond because it's constantly feeding toxic stuff into them. Whereas in African culture, you have the ability to take a person outside of the pond. It's a bigger pond, it's a higher level pond, and you have the ability to take it through initiation into a different level, so the person then can become a vessel through which the ancestors are able to help guide and promote and save and move forward the community itself. Because it's what we do as a society that's going to determine what we do as a society. If a society is predicated on doing things, constantly doing things which are going to undermine our development of our spirit, then we have an underdeveloped spiritual society. But society has within it, built within it, techniques and opportunities to awaken and cultivate and nourish the higher part of our spirit. Then as people evolve to their society, then they will begin to function on a higher level.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that in addition to ancestor reverence being a term that's been misunderstood, another term that's been misunderstood that you just mentioned was initiation. I think that a lot of times the uninformed, when they hear the word initiation, might think of hazing, you know, like something on a college campus where they just, you know, haze you and, you know, do something crazy to you. A lot of stories have come out about using the name initiation have gotten into some serious stuff. Could you talk about just initiation from the comedic perspective and what it is, so that when people do hear that term, initiated, the uninformed can be informed as to what initiation actually is?
Well, initiation is a process through which one is able to identify where they are spiritually speaking and be given techniques and training on how to evolve the higher parts of the spirit. That's the goal of initiation. The goal of life is to awaken our divinity. So initiation is to take us from where we are to where we need to go. But it's what we're saying is, and the term is like, it's like independent study, if you will, you know, where everyone has a course, everyone can take a course, but if you want to go beyond and go deeper into the subject matter, then you have to go to an independent study course where you get special insights and special training to help you understand something better. That's what initiation does. Initiation, we're all in this society together, but if we want to evolve beyond what the society is, we have to have some special independent study that takes place to allow us to move and elevate our understanding and our function in the world. So that's the goal of true initiation. See, the English language gives us all kinds of false narratives because, you know, it's all kinds of crazy terms, things that go in the English language. But because we're limited to it, we have to, as you say, we have to clarify terms so that we're all on the same page, because we can say the same word but means two different, diametrically opposed things in a person's life.
Everybody, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Medoran. Comedy's been very gracious in giving us the time this evening when he could have easily just rescheduled the interview, and I see the phone lines are absolutely packed. And I just want to, you know, make sure that everybody has the information concerning the workshop that's coming up this Saturday, March the 24th, at the Simbeb Wellness Complex in Washington, D.C. That's going to be Evidence-Based Spirituality, Restoring African Spiritual Science, and that's going to be at 6224 3rd Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C. And in case you need to MapQuest that's 200-11. If you'd like more information, please call 202-630-2507. Again, that's 202-630-2507. The cost is only $10. I always say you can find $10 in the cushions of your couch, right, and change. So that's how affordable it is. So, you know, you can't say it costs too much because it's only $10. And make sure you get there early. It starts at 5, but again, I would advise you at least get there at 4 so that you have time to browse around the complex. I mean, again, they've got the Simbeb Cafe there where they've got a delicious vegan cuisine. Also, the the boutique where you can actually go in there. And you, if you've never been in there, you got to go in there. I mean, you're going to, I guarantee you, you go in there, you're going to buy something because you're going to see something that you want. They've got clothes, they've got books, they've got accessories. I mean, you name it, well, you got to go see it for yourself, okay? So make sure that you get there at 4 so that you can definitely be on time for the workshop, and that gives you time to browse around and to get something to eat as well as purchase something from the boutique, because you're going to, guaranteed. Okay. Please give the date again. For you mentioned the workshop that's coming up in June. I think you said that, I forget the dates that you mentioned. Could you give those dates again for those people who might be wanting to mark that on their calendar as well?
Well, we have another workshop on the 31st of March, dealing with the EMF, the radiation, microwave radiation, Wi-Fi, et cetera, and the effects on the community. That's a very important lecture that people need to come out for. We also have this conference that's taking place April 28th and 29th as a part of the African Spiritual Traditional Spirit Coalition here in D.C. That's going to be looking at how we need to organize ourselves within our communities, within our organizations, within our lives, so we can begin to improve the quality of our communities, you know, our neighborhoods, really, because we don't have a community. Well, actually, the title of the conference is The Spiritual Foundation of Community. Community means we're all communing in a unified approach, right? Common unity is what the word itself means. We don't have that. We have neighborhoods where people just kind of live together, but we're not communing. We're not cultivating. We're not developing ourselves and the culture and our individuals and our lives together. So we want to begin to transform and challenge opportunities for people to begin to utilize our ancestral practices and traditions on an organizational level, on an individual level. You know, why is our organizations are promoting these Western models and Western values when our ancestors used models that worked for 5,000 plus years? So that's then. And then we have a relationships conference coming up in June. I think the first weekend, well, the second weekend in June, June 7th or something like that, 7th and 8th, 8th and 9th, something like that. So that's for people who, you know, are in a relationship and want to improve its functioning, or people want to get in a relationship and base it from the African spiritual perspective.
Hope that we can do a show on the conference in April, because when we talk about, when we look at things that are going on in the world today, I know that even having read your book and on the divine kingship, and even the shows that we did on the Asante model, when we looked at the different aspects, we looked at political, we looked at environment, we looked at economic, we looked at different aspects of it. One of the things that came out in those interviews was that a lot of times, and well, part of the system was that the young were actually trained for political office, okay, that they were actually trained to take leaderships of position that could, you know, help move the community or the society forward. And I think that if you had people that were being trained actually with the 11 laws of God as the base, the Kemetic foundational spirituality system as their base, as the foundation, then in moving into and promoting the values learned as a result of having a spiritual-based foundation could really, really help. And I think that being able to move into the political realm with this type of knowledge, this type of system, and being trained for that would be definitely a benefit. You agree?
Oh, no question. That's the goal.
Somebody, before you go, looks like somebody wants to talk to you. 4725, you're on the air with Orwa. Yeah, he made the wrong comment.
Hey, good afternoon, Orwa and Joanza. My name is Christian from Gainesville.
Gainesville, Florida?
Heads up. Thank you for having the show again. I just wanted to ask a quick question, because I know today, or was it yesterday? I'm not sure. It's the vernal equinox. You guys have programs on summers equinox or in other solstices. I was wondering about information for this one, the spring equinox.
Yes, we do. Well, actually, the program is before the equinox takes place. It was a week ago, a week and a half ago, I think it was, in terms of preparing one for the equinox. But I think that Javon should have the information in his archives in terms of shows that have been done on that. So if you look in the archives of Jawanda's show, you can get more information on that.
Absolutely. And remember, though, that the archives, that the shows that you'll be listening to on the spring equinox will be springs that we're promoting a show, I'm sorry, promoting a workshop that was taking place at that time. So we have one for 2017, but of course the information concerning the workshop will have been passed, but the guarantee you, if you listen to that show, you will learn so much about the, not just the spring equinox, you'll learn about the fall equinox, or you'll learn about the summer solstice, the winter solstice, you'll learn about the fall equinox, because the guest on that particular show, which was Hetchemsuheru, Shekhameh Abneter, actually went around the from winter, spring, summer, and fall. I mean, he just took us all through the seasons and broke down each one, each particular, each equinox, each solstice, and what that meant. And so I guarantee you, if you go back and listen to that show, you'll see that you'll get so much out of it. So I encourage you to go back. It's in the archives. It would have been approximately, it would have been around this time last year. So if you look in probably maybe, it might have been late February, possibly early March where we did that show, it would have been in 2017. You'll definitely benefit from listening to that show.
I'm sorry, can you say the name? I'm sorry, Jawanda. You said the name. I'm trying to look for it. What say was? I'm sorry.
The guest name?
Yes.
Shekhameh Abneter. Shekhem. Mayab, I believe that's Mehab. Neter, Neter.
Thanks.
Okay, so, yeah, if, it should be around early March, late February of 2017. It might be under the name Hetchemsuheru. Okay, so, again, that would be Hetchemsuheru, Heru. Okay. So I guarantee you, you'll look. And then we've got other shows on the equinoxes and the solstices all throughout the archives. The winter solstice, the summer, you know, the summer solstice, all those are in the archives as well. So before you know it, the summer solstice is going to be here. So you might as well, while you're listening to that, listen to the summer solstice as well. You'll benefit.
I love your broadcast. I've been going through the 11 laws. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate it.
Okay, man. Take care.
Thank you.
That's it. I need to go, Joanna.
Thank you so much for your time, Orwa. I really appreciate it. Peace and blessings to you. Thank you again, my brother. I look forward to speaking with you again soon. All right, head to
thank you.
Everybody, that was Orwa Hehi, Medaran Comet. Make sure that you're at the, if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, then make sure that on this Saturday you are at the Simbeb Wellness Complex at 6224 3rd Street Northwest. The zip there is 20011. For more information, please call 202-630-2507. Again, that's 202-630-2507. The cost is only $10. Starts at 5 p.m., but you're going to get there at 4, right? Right. All right. Everybody, thank you so much for your time. Wasn't that a powerful interview? Oh, my goodness. I really enjoy every time I have an opportunity to speak with Dr. Incomet, awesome, awesome guest, shares awesome, awesome information. So, again, everybody, I thank you so much for your time. You know, again, the archives, we mentioned the archives, and thank you, Christian, for calling in. I really appreciate you taking the time out to call and, you know, to listen as well. But everybody, take advantage of this opportunity. We've got an archive system that's out of this world. To all of the listeners, if you haven't followed the show, you can actually follow the show, all right? And then you will be notified every time I do a broadcast. You'll be notified of the guest. You'll be notified of the time, the date, and the topic, okay? So that way you don't miss a show, okay? I've got some awesome shows coming up. I've got Owa, I'm Tahuti Kamoz, getting ready to come back on soon. Shechem Amhetrahem Ma'at is getting ready to come back on soon. As a matter of fact, I want to recommend one of her shows because she did a show on meditation. It's more than just breathing and relaxation. That's in the archives, okay? That will be on the first page of the archives. Again, meditation is more than just breathing and relaxation. Brother Orwa mentioned meditation in the interview. And if you listen to that show, you will really get into the nuts and bolts of what meditation is and why it's important to meditate, okay? So I encourage you to do that. So, hey, everybody, before you go, I just want to tell you how much I really appreciate you. Thank you for your patience today. For those of you who hung in there with us while we were waiting on Orwa, thank you so much. And I encourage you to please spread the word about this information. Remember, we're trying to change the world. Okay, we're trying to make sure that everybody has this information because we're trying to be and to actualize and manifest our divinity, all right? So, everybody, again, thank you so much for your time. Until the next time, my name is Juwan, so who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? Attack.
Going on in the world today. Sometimes when I talk to you, well, I just don't know what to say. Except that, oh Lord, will you show us your way?
Father, there's plenty of food. And people are hungry. There's plenty of love. And people are lonely. There's plenty of money, but not enough to spend. So much sadness and a whole. There's no fresh air. All right.